Professional basketball today is a high-stakes sport where the top players sign multi-million-dollar contracts and are turned into media stars. But this flashy sport had rather humble beginnings. It was slow-moving and often played in a cage with a hand-sewn leather ball. My guest, Robert Peterson, has documented the early history of basketball in his new book, Cages to Jump Shots. Peterson is also the author of Only the Ball Was White, an account of baseball's Negro leagues in the days before Jackie Robinson. Peterson points out that while most sports have evolved from other sports, basketball is the only real national sport that was developed by one man. His name was James Naismith.
At the time, this was in 1891, he was an instructor at the School for Christian Workers in Springfield, Massachusetts. It was a YMCA training school. And he was assigned a class of rather mature students, men who were going to become YMCA general secretaries, and they had to take gym every day. And he found that they were very unhappy with the YMCA's wintertime regimen of calisthenics and weight training and jumping over the horse and the simple children's games. And so he wanted to invent a game from scratch that would interest grown men, and that led to the development of basketball. But it turned out to be a very simple game, and students at the training school fell in love with it and took it back to their local YMCAs during the Christmas vacation that year of 1891, and it became an immediate hit in YMCAs all over the country.
Now, in the very early days of the game, there was the basket had a bottom, so the ball was contained in the basket.
Yes.
And the referee would have to climb up a ladder and retrieve the ball anytime somebody made a basket.
Yes, or punch it out with a long pole. There was a type of basket, though, that had a cord hanging down from it, and the cord was attached to the net, and when the referee pulled the cord, it lifted the net and the ball rolled out the top. But until 1912, the rule said that the ball must be thrown into the basket and stay there in order to count as a score.
Basketball early on had a reputation for being a very rowdy sport. The wise were worried that people were playing a game that was leading to violence. The rowdiness discouraged fans from attending. It certainly doesn't seem like a very violent sport now. What led to the constant fights early on in the game?
It's true that that basketball was very rough in its early years. Primarily, I think, at least in the professional ranks, because they retained the double dribble. That is, a player could dribble the ball as many times as he wanted, catch it with both hands, and resume dribbling. Now, this meant that a large, strong man could just bounce the ball with both hands down the floor and back into everybody on the way. And consequently, there was an awful lot of body contact.
The game, the way you described it, moved really slowly early on.
Yes.
Is that because there was no rule about dribbling? You could hold on to the ball as long as you wanted to. It sounds like people moved across the court really slowly.
Well, that's generally true. There were no rules at the time, of course, about how long you could hold the ball. There was no 24-second shot clock. There wasn't even a rule that you had to get it across a mid-court line within 10 seconds. And so it was perfectly possible for a team to stay in the backcourt for minutes on end if they wanted to. And that was good strategy. If you held a three-point lead in the last few minutes of a game, it was good strategy to play keep away instead of trying to make a basket. And that's really one of the reasons why, probably the most important reason why it was so slow and why scores were so low in those early years.
What sped up the game?
Mainly, I think, well, probably two things. Number one, the athletes were becoming better, I think, by the 1930s. In 1932, They established the 10-second rule, which forced a team to advance the ball into its forecourt within 10 seconds. They also adopted a rule that a player could not stay within the foul lane for more than 3 seconds. And then in 1937, they eliminated the center jump. Previous to that rule change, there was a center jump after every score, and of course to start each quarter. So those rule changes in the 30s added a great deal to speeding up the game. Of course, the thing that made it what it is today was the 24-second shot clock, which was adopted in 1954 by the professionals.
Like baseball, basketball started with black leagues and white leagues. Can you tell us something about one of the best teams in the black leagues?
Well, there was really no black league in basketball. There were in baseball.
It was just like black teams.
There were black teams, mm-hmm. All black teams. The two best known were the Renaissance Big Five and the Harlem Globetrotters, whom most fans of today are very well aware of. The Renaissance were the older team. They were formed in 1923 in New York and became, in the 1930s, the best-known barnstorming team in the country, excellent team. They're now, as a team, in the Hall of Fame. The Globetrotters came along in 1927, but they were confined pretty much to the Midwest and the Upper Northwest until around 1940. And by the way, in their early years, the Globetrotters played straight basketball. They weren't doing comedy at all, and they developed into a very excellent team. The Renaissance won the first World Tournament, which was a tournament for professional teams in the 1940s, and the Globetrotters won the second. So you know very well that there had to be two very good basketball teams there because they were defeating the champions of white leagues in achieving that status of World Tournament champions.
The average height of players in basketball has changed a lot over the years. You write about how 6'5" used to be considered real a giant size in the early days. Can you discuss a little bit the height changes that have taken place and why you think that's happened?
Yes, the in the professional game, it's hard to establish accurate statistics on the heights of the early players, but we do know that until around 1930. A six-footer was considered a big man. Well, now a six-footer is a midget, of course, in the NBA. The reason seems to have been that the thinking among coaches before, say, 1935 or 38, somewhere in there, was that the really big man, the 6'5", 6'8", 6'10" man, was too clumsy to play basketball. And indeed, the really tall men that did play in the 20s and 30s were considered rather clumsy and rarely ran. They were mainly on the team to get the tip-off that came after every score. And that was their purpose in being on the team. They hardly touched the ball after that. And it wasn't until a few coaches did accept some big men in the 30s and then into the 40s that the big men began to really dominate the game.
How do you think the sport has changed because of the changing height of the players?
Well, it's now, as the sports writers say, it's now played above the rim. That is, the players are so tall and strong and can jump so high that they can, most of the players in the NBA can dunk the ball with ease. And that was never done in the early days, although one of the reasons was in those days you couldn't touch the rim. If you did, your score would have been nullified. But today, of course, they hang on the rim. They're so strong and big. The game is entirely different than it was even 40 years ago. Certainly today, they're bigger and stronger and faster than they were in the early days of the NBA itself, and I can't imagine that they won't get better yet, but some of the things they do make an old-timer like me bug-eyed just watching.
Like what?
Well, they can take two steps from the foul line, and they're on top of the rim. Well, I couldn't even get near that, and I'm 6 feet tall. And their shooting is absolutely astonishing to somebody who played in the 40s and 50s. In those days, if you got 33% shooting average, you were a pretty good shot. And nowadays, if you're not around 65 or 70, you can't make the ball club. So their skills are just eons beyond what they were in the 30s, 40s, 50s, even the 60s.
Okay. I want to thank you very much for talking with us about basketball.
Thank you.
Robert Peterson's new history of the early years of basketball is called Cages to Jump Shots.